The Local Administration, Federal Affairs, and Special District Subcommittee will come to order. Tamara, please call the roll.
Chairperson Smolicka.
Here.
Representatives Amnesty.
Here.
Anderson.
Here.
Bartleman.
Here.
Barrero.
Here.
Brackett.
Here.
Daly.
Here.
Dunkley.
Here.
Gottlieb.
Here.
Griffiths.
Here.
Holcomb.
Here.
Shaw.
Here.
McLean.
Here.
Plakin.
Here.
Tuck.
Here.
Woodson.
Here.
Yarkowski. A quorum is present.
Thank you, members. By your presence, we have a quorum. In fact, we have a full committee, and it's wonderful to see you all. I think you all came out to make sure that before we get to business, that we represent one of our, that we share with one of our own a happy birthday. Representative Gottlieb, happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you for sharing your day with us. Before we get going, as always, please make sure your cell phones and other communication devices, including laptops, are turned off or placed in silent mode. Members, today we have a presentation on mosquito control district performance reviews. In 2021, the legislature directed OPAGA to conduct performance reviews of certain types of independent special districts. Today's presentation on mosquito control districts is the first report due as part of that process. Lila Rachevskis from the Balmoral Group, which was contracted to assist in completing the report, will present the report's findings to us today. Again, in order to provide sufficient time for member comments and questions, I ask all members to hold those until Dr. Rachevskis is done with her presentation. Dr. Rachevskis, you are recognized to proceed, and thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee members. Thank you so much for inviting us today to present our results of our research of the reviews of the independent mosquito control districts. As the chair indicated, I'm Lila Rachevskis. I'm with the Balmoral Group. And today I'm going to walk you through several aspects of all 15 of our reports that the Balmoral Group issued. I'll summarize the methodology that we applied throughout these reviews. I'll provide an overview of mosquito control districts and what mosquito control services are. I'll provide information on how mosquito control districts are governed. I'll present some information on district resources, including revenues and expenditures. I'll summarize what we found regarding district performance, and finally summarize some of our main findings and recommendations. Section 189.0695 Florida Statutes requires the conduct of performance reviews of the state's 15 independent mosquito control districts, or MCDs. The Balmoral Group was selected by OPAGA to conduct these reviews and evaluate district program activities and functions. More specifically, the statute requires evaluation of district board function and governance, assessment of service delivery and comparison with similar services, review of districts' purposes, goals, objectives, performance measures, and standards, and the extent to which those are achieved, analysis of district resources, and recommendations for statutory and budgetary changes to improve district operations, reduce costs, or reduce duplication. As you can see in the map on this slide, the districts are located throughout the state. They are largely located in coastal areas, although there are two inland districts that serve smaller inland communities. Of the coastal districts, some of them serve entire counties, while some serve island areas or chains of islands like the Keys. I'll give an overview of our methodology. To conduct these reviews, the Balmoral Group implemented several different methods. We requested data and other information from each MCD, and we made follow-up requests at several points throughout our investigation. We also requested tax data from the Department of Revenue and mosquito control district budgetary data from the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services. We conducted several site visits, which I'll describe in a little more detail on the next slide. We consulted throughout the reviews with a subject matter expert with extensive experience working in mosquito control, administration, and research in Florida. We reviewed available documentation on MCD history and governance. We analyzed the demographic and population data for each district. We also conducted interviews and collected information from district staff and other local stakeholders, including Parks and Recreation staff, local health, Department of Health staff, and county commissioners. And using all of the data we collected, we conducted various qualitative and quantitative analyses. And lastly, we reviewed and analyzed information that the districts provided on their performance measurement. So regarding the site visits, Balmoral Group was required to conduct site visits within each of the six geographic groupings of the mosquito control districts. We conducted a total of 7 site visits to each of the districts listed here, and these allowed us to meet with district staff and observe firsthand mosquito control operations, including district equipment and facilities, and some typical day-to-day activities that are conducted by MCD staff. Next, I'll go through and give you some examples of these types of activities, provide an overview of mosquito control and district characteristics. So most mosquito control programs use what is referred to as integrated pest management approaches, or IPM. These are approaches that control mosquito populations by targeting different stages of a mosquito's life cycle with various prevention and control measures. IPM includes the 8 different categories listed on this slide, and it is considered a best practice in conducting activities across all 8 of these areas. However, it's important to note that it does require a fair amount of certification and training to thoroughly conduct services across all 8 areas. So while some MCDs do perform services across all 8 areas of IPM, some do not perform all of these services. They perform them to different degrees. So I'll walk you through in a little bit more detail each of these categories and provide a couple of examples of each in case you may not be familiar with these types of approaches. Mosquito surveillance is done typically through ground or aerial surveillance approaches, typically using mosquito traps and counts and analysis. This is a critical component of all IPM programs because it really informs the location and timing of chemical treatments. Source reduction, the next on the list, is referring to the elimination of habitats for larval mosquitoes in places or objects such as tires, pools, tarps, et cetera, or other objects that can accumulate standing water. Larvaciding involves application of treatments to target mosquito larvae. This can be done from the ground or using helicopters. Adulticiding is a term that refers to insecticide spraying via trucks or helicopters to target adult mosquito populations. These activities are typically conducted at nighttime for safety reasons. And there are also non-chemical, biological, and alternative approaches. One example of this is the sterile insect technique, in which male insects are sterilized via radiation treatment, and this prevents the female eggs from hatching. Another biological approach is the distribution of gambusia fish, and this is a type of a fish that eats mosquito larvae, and it's an effective form of mosquito control when the fish are placed in ponds and ditches. And some districts do provide these free of charge to the public. Another important component of IPM is disease surveillance, and many MCDs conduct this through what are referred to as sentinel chicken flocks. And these are chickens that are placed in locations throughout a district, and regular blood samples are taken from these animals and sent to the state laboratory in Tampa for testing. And the testing detects the presence of various mosquito-borne diseases, such as West Nile, dengue, Zika, and several others. This is considered a safe method because the chickens do not spread the disease if they acquire it, but it is an important indicator of the presence of disease in a district. Research, another important component of IPM. Many districts do conduct their own in-house research. Not all of them do, but those that do are conducting research to identify new methods to improve treatment efficiency. And lastly, education is a very important component that districts conduct. Many districts implement various public education, outreach, and training activities to educate the public and their staff about their own mosquito control activities, as well as helping the public understand what they can do themselves on their own properties at home, such as source reduction by removing containers of standing water. I'll now move to some district characteristics. Districts vary in population and size, going from a low of about 1,700 people in the Moorhaven District to a high of over 750,000 people in the Lee County MCD. They vary in size as well, varying from a low of about 1 square mile, again in Moorhaven, to over 1,100 square miles in Lee County MCD. They do have some characteristics in common. Most MCDs are located in densely developed communities with growing populations that are surrounded by extensive natural areas that really require the mosquito control to allow the areas to be habitable. In addition, heavy rainfall events characterize most MCDs and drive the need for mosquito control. These characteristics, however, will also vary across districts and affect the complexity of district operations. For example, areas with higher levels of development pressure that are encroaching on expansive natural areas increase the complexity of mosquito control operations needed to keep those locations inhabitable. I'll now move to talk about mosquito control district governance. The MCDs were established in the legislature starting in the early 1900s, with the oldest in Indian River, established in 1925, and the most recently established being Buckhead Ridge in 1977. Several MCDs have been reauthorized throughout the years through local ordinances or chapter law. All MCDs are governed by an elected board of commissioners. These boards range in size from 3 to 7 commissioners, with most having 3. The board duties are statutorily defined and do include the control and elimination of mosquitoes, providing construction of canals, ditches, drains, and other infrastructure, adopting a district budget, purchasing real or personal property, and setting the property tax rates for their district. This is a very important role, as districts are generally funded by the ad valorem taxes in their districts, and millage rates range from a low of 0.1123 to a high of 1.0, and there is one district that does not levy taxes. In addition, MCDs must adhere to several statutory requirements and rule requirements. Chapter 189 Florida statutes governs independent special districts, as you learned last week from the Department of Commerce. Chapter 388 Florida statutes establishes the requirements for mosquito control districts in the state. And Chapter 5E13 of the Florida Administrative Code establishes the specific mosquito control program administration requirements as overseen by DACS. I'll now discuss some of the mosquito control district resources that we collected data on. I would like to note here that the period of our review included a portion of fiscal year 22-23 as we were conducting our research kind of partway through that fiscal year, and the prior 3 full fiscal years, 2019-20 through 2021-22. And therefore, the most recent complete fiscal year of data in our review was for fiscal year 21-22, and the data that I'll be presenting is for that year. So this slide shows you the number of properties subject to millage in each district, the total taxable value of those parcels in millions of dollars, and the revenue each district received from ad valorem taxes, as well as the broken out revenues from other sources. As you can see, the vast majority of the MCD revenues do come from the ad valorem property taxes, with the exception of Moorhaven MCD, as I mentioned, is the one district that does not levy taxes, but is funded by a fee on local utility bills. And districts may receive other revenue also, that is from the other sources in the far right column, and this can come from things like grants and donations, equipment sales, interest, and other sources. This slide shows the total district expenditures for the same fiscal year, broken down by administrative and direct costs and other expenditures. The districts were asked to break out their administrative versus direct costs, where administrative costs refer to the expenditures to support the operation of the district, but that are not directly related to district program or activities. This can include things like salaries for staff not actively engaged in district services, bookkeeping, financial reporting, audits, and et cetera. Whereas direct program and activity costs refer to expenses tied to implementing the district's services directly. And both of these cost categories were reported for categories including salaries and benefits, professional services, operating expenses, supplies and materials, and capital expenses. The next slide shows this using the same data that you just saw on the prior 2 slides, just in a slightly different format to illustrate the revenues and expenditures across all districts. It gives you a little bit easier way to see how they compare to each other, and you can see how much they vary in the total revenues and expenditures across each. Revenues range from a low of approximately $72,000 in fiscal year 21-22 in the Moorhaven MCD to a high of over $24 million in Lee County. And similarly, the expenditures range from approximately $60,000, again in Moorhaven, to over 26 million in Lee County. Overall, during the review, during the full review period, the districts that we reviewed data for, their revenues did exceed their expenditures typically. The excess expenditures you see here for Lee County were attributable largely to hurricane-related costs in 2022. Districts also vary in their staffing numbers. As mentioned earlier, they may have from 3 to 7 commissioners, with most districts having 3. Districts have paid in-house staff, and those numbers range from a low of 3 in Fort Myers Beach MCD to 90 in Lee County MCD. And some, but not all, districts do have contracted staff for services like accounting or aerial mosquito control via helicopter pilots. And most districts do not have regular volunteers. One district reported 14 volunteers, although there are some districts that have occasional seasonal volunteers through internship programs that are not indicated here. And district vacancy, staff vacancy rates varied slightly across districts. And again, this chart shows you the same data that we just looked at on the previous slide, but highlights the variation in staffing sizes for the number of paid in-house staff and contracted staff across districts. Staffing levels, like revenues and expenditures, vary widely across the districts, which can appear to be related to district size, but are more likely a function of the complexity of the district's operations. So in areas, for example, like the Keys, Collier, Pasco, and Lee counties, there's heavy development pressure combined with proximity to those expansive natural areas, which increases the complexity of mosquito operations needed in those districts. Based on the budgetary and staffing information that was just presented, the Balmoral Group created a few grouping categories just to be able to show how the districts relate to each other in terms of budgetary and staff sizes. So you can see that the districts range from a small group of 3, what are considered very small districts, to a slightly larger group of small districts, several medium districts, to the 3 largest districts in the state. Districts typically use a variety of different types of equipment, including different types of boats, vehicles, aircraft, field and lab equipment, in addition to the use of Sentinel chickens, as I described earlier. And as you can see here, they also vary widely in the quantities of equipment that they own or lease. Those numbers are shown in parentheses from the minimum to maximum identified across districts. And these differences generally, again, correlate not just to the size of the district, but to the complexity of their operations. The Balmoral Group also reviewed information on each MCD's performance, including what services they deliver, how they deliver them, and whether they are consistent with the district's statutory requirements. And we also looked at how districts measure their performance, what metrics they track, and whether they have developed a strategic plan with clearly defined goals, objectives, performance measures, and standards. We found that all MCDs provide services that are in line with their statutory directives, and we found that the majority of districts report that they track their performance through the number of service requests that they receive and respond to, and the number of arbovirus cases and deaths that have been identified by the Florida Department of Health in their district. We found that most districts have responded to every service request that they received in the review period. We also found that district arbovirus counts during the review period were relatively low overall, with a few exceptions that I will provide a little more detail on in a following slide. And all districts reported 0 deaths related to arbovirus counts in the review period. Regarding the service calls that I just described that districts track, they do vary in the volume of service calls they receive each year, so this slide shows you the number of calls received in each year of the review period, with the highest volumes being received by Anastasia, Lee County, and Florida Keys MCDs, and the lowest volumes occurring in Amelia Island, Beach, and Fort Myers Beach MCDs. This slide summarizes the arbovirus counts that I mentioned on the previous slide. So you can see these counts again for each district across each year of the review period. It's important to note that these arbovirus counts include both those that are locally acquired, meaning they were acquired in Florida and detected in the district, versus those that are categorized by the Department of Health as travel-related, meaning that they were likely acquired by somebody who had recently traveled internationally to a place that has endemic mosquito-borne virus. The locally acquired cases are more cause for urgent concern, as they may spread more rapidly than an isolated travel-related case that somebody may have acquired outside of the state. So in Lee County, for example, the data shows one locally acquired case in 2020. However, the other cases identified in this chart for 2022 and 23 were travel-related cases. The Florida Keys, however, experienced a dengue outbreak in 2020, where it did have 67 locally acquired cases, for which it had to implement a fairly significant emergency response effort to control that outbreak. Overall, however, districts have been successful in keeping the locally acquired arbovirus counts very low or zero in each of the past 4 years, which is an important indicator of the effectiveness of their services. I'll now move to summarizing some of our findings and recommendations. So our findings led to several legislative recommendations that relate to performance measurement, waste tires, Lee and Fort Myers Beach MCD consolidations, and two recommendations that are specific to the Florida Keys MCD. I'll start with the recommendation regarding performance measurement. Our analysis found that some districts have no formal goals, objectives, performance measures, or standards established, while others have some formally defined goals and objectives, but do not have performance measures or standards that tie directly to all of their goals and objectives. Several districts do have detailed strategic plans they have developed that help them measure their progress towards goals and objectives. However, our analysis found that all districts could benefit from some assistance for measuring their performance. The Florida Coordinating Council on Mosquito Control is an entity established in statute, and it could be directed to form a subcommittee of mosquito control professionals and researchers from around the state to develop a set of model goals and performance measures and standards and objectives from which all MCDs could benefit. Another finding from TBG's research related to waste tires. Waste tires are commonly found scattered throughout residential and commercial areas of the state, and the design of tires makes them ideal habitat for mosquito larvae. And this is particularly for species of mosquitoes that are known to be important disease vectors. They're also difficult to treat with traditional chemical treatment measures, and the best way to control the mosquito habitat they create is really to simply remove them. However, this can be costly to districts because of waste tire collection and disposal fees. In several districts, waste tires do present significant mosquito control challenges, and the availability of funding to support waste tire abatement would be beneficial. DEP has allowed MCDs to apply for waste tire abatement funding in the past, but advertising for the funding is not necessarily specifically directed towards MCDs, and the department is not required by statute to continue providing such funding in the future. So facilitating consistent access to such funding could help increase tire collections across the state. This also could have benefits beyond mosquito control, including general pollution reduction and beautification benefits. To facilitate the type of access to this type of funding, the legislature could consider amending statute to require a portion of the solid waste management funds to be allocated to waste tire abatement activities specifically by MCDs. Our review of the MCDs required addressing the question of whether similar services are provided by county or municipal governments within a district's boundaries. We found that in Lee County, there is duplication of services between Fort Myers Beach and Lee County MCDs, and that there are potential economies of scale to be gained from the merger of these two districts. The municipality of Fort Myers Beach is located within Lee County, and Lee County MCD currently and historically has provided several mosquito control services for the city. Fort Myers Beach MCD operates with a very small staff and is faced with the need to rebuild its facility after the tragic destruction that occurred from Hurricane Ian in 2022. The cost to rebuild this has been estimated to be from approximately $600,000 to over $2 million to the district. Lee County MCD has reported that it does have the capacity to absorb Fort Myers Beach MCD, and this could allow Fort Myers Beach MCD access to additional resources, equipment, and funding from the well-established operations of Lee County MCD. Fort Myers Beach MCD, to its great credit, has continued to provide mosquito control services even after the devastation of Hurricane Ian. However, our recommendation is based on the evidence that the district is currently and has historically been reliant on Lee County MCD for several services. The small staff of the district leave little room for attrition or illness, to be able to continue to provide services, and there are benefits to be gained from merging the districts, such as access to Lee County services through its well-established operations. The legislature could consider merging these districts by special act, or the districts could jointly merge into a single independent district as provided in statute. I'll now move to our two findings specific to the Florida Keys MCD. This district has unique operational circumstances, including its island geography. It has demographic characteristics of heavy tourism and a spread out population. It has extensive environmentally sensitive lands. It has several federally regulated properties, and it has unique arthropod populations with some of the highest number of arthropod species in the state. Each of these elements complicates the Florida Keys MCD's operations, and TBG found that there are potential legislative changes that could assist the district in managing these challenging circumstances. The first relates to emergency funding. The Florida Keys MCD incurred over $1 million in unbudgeted treatment costs as a result of the 2020 dengue outbreak. While local governments may access federal disaster assistance through FEMA, MCDs are not always eligible for funding assistance for disease outbreaks specifically. Therefore, the legislature could consider amending statute to direct DACs to allocate a portion of the funding for emergency mosquito-borne disease outbreaks that do not occur as part of a state of emergency. The next recommendation specific to the Keys MCD relates to housing costs, which are a significant barrier to MCD staff in the Florida Keys as a result of skyrocketing rents and housing costs recently. The legislature recently created an Affordable Housing Act to incentivize affordable housing developments for certain types of demographic groups, and could consider amending this statute to include affordable housing projects that could assist Florida Keys MCD staff. Our research also resulted in several recommendations for non-legislative changes, and I'll just highlight a few of these for you today, but they cover a range of different areas from performance measurement to district expansion to various types of facility improvements. Related to performance measurement, as discussed earlier, we also made several findings related to performance measurement across all districts. And we present another recommendation to the districts that currently do not have any strategic plan or formal measures in place. We recommend that they adopt such measures through a strategic planning process, and in doing this, seek guidance from other districts who have successfully conducted such processes in the past. Similarly, we recommend to other districts that have established performance measurement approaches to develop additional measures and standards that would allow them to track progress towards all their goals and objectives. I'll skip over a few of these recommendations here. I'm very happy to answer any questions that you may have about them, but I'm going to skip ahead right now to the Collier MCD recommendation, as it could relate to future legislation. The Collier MCD has been seeking to expand its boundaries, and while this has been approved at the local level, it requires legislative action to proceed. We recommend that the district continue its outreach to various stakeholder groups throughout this process, as the expansion includes extensive environmentally sensitive areas. And I will now move to the second East Flagler MCD recommendation. I'll just briefly mention this one that relates to East Flagler MCD's status as a state-approved mosquito control district. Its status as a DACS-approved MCD has not been in effect since fiscal year 1920. The district, therefore, is not required to provide annual data to DACs as other districts currently do, and is not eligible for state funding. We recommend that the district rebuild its status with the state that would allow annual updated information to be provided to DACs and allow it to be eligible for state funds. This would have helped, for example, facilitate receiving consistent data for our review across all of the districts. And once again, I'm going to skip through, Madam Chair. Unless there are any questions, again, about these, happy to answer any questions or give you more detail about some of the district-specific recommendations. I would like to quickly note that the full reports are available on OPAGA's website. And with that concludes my prepared remarks today, and I would be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Rachevskis. Representative Bartleman, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair.
My question just had to do with, there was a recommendation about they purchased the canals, but the canals are privately owned. So is that an eminent domain situation? Or is it possible that another independent district, like a drainage district, could own the canals? And then I'm just curious, can they do eminent domain as a mosquito district if they want to purchase a private canal? Just how does that all that work? Because
you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that question, Representative. I would have to go back to the report to confirm the purchase of those canals, but I believe the issue there has to do with South Florida Water Management District owned canals, and I don't believe that eminent domain is a factor in these purchases. So, and I'm unable to answer the question of whether MCDs have the authority to purchase through eminent domain, but that's not something that came up during the course of our review and our identification of this as an issue.
Okay. Want follow-up?
You're recognized.
So I'm looking for the page now because I had it marked. So you did recommend it, though, but you're not sure if they can do it? Like, how would you, I'm trying to find, do you have the recommendation page? I'm looking for it now. I'm just curious, like, you recommended something that you're not sure they can do? Or because how do you purchase a private canal if there's not a willing seller?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It is a recommendation that we made, and I apologize, Representative, I misspoke, that it is from privately owned. It is under private ownership in some cases. So I think that the confounding aspect is that the Water Management District also owns some portions of those canals. So Buckhead Ridge is a district that is almost entirely canal-based. It's really unique geographically. It has this intertwining system of canals through a fairly small geographic area, but many miles of canals, actually. So maintaining those, if it was in their ownership, would benefit them and allow them to provide more efficient services. I don't think that we looked at an eminent domain issue because I don't think that there has been, we haven't looked at it that closely to see, are there unwilling sellers? I think it's just a matter of, if there are willing sellers, can Buckhead Ridge access some grant funds that would allow it to make those purchases?
Representative, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So then my question goes to the South Florida Water Management District canals. Those are vital for drainage. Like, for instance, I have the C-11 canal in my district, and there's the C-9 that takes care of all the flooding. So how would you recommend that they're purchasing it from another governmental agency where it's more important? They're both important jobs, but you have to relieve the flooding, and they need jurisdiction. So would you say let's withdraw that rec, because they're going to say they told us to take this canal. I just want to get into that a little bit, because like C-11 and C-9 are really important in my district, and also part of it leads into the big drainage structure that's owned by the Army Corps of Engineers. So I don't know why you would give that to a mosquito control district when it's part of the infrastructure to alleviate flooding in an area. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Bartleman, for that follow-up question, and I apologize for the lack of clarification on that. The Water Management District canals certainly are extremely important for drainage. I don't think that we're suggesting that we recommend that the district take those canals away from the Water Management District. I think there's just some jurisdictional overlap, perhaps, within some of the smaller canals of Buckhead Ridge. But again, I'm happy to take a look at the details of that and get back to the committee with more information. But I think it was more about, if there are privately owned canals, could the district obtain some funding to be able to purchase them from willing sellers?
Thank you. Representative Holcomb, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So going back to one of your first slides, you have the millage rates that you reported from 0.1123 to 0.10. Is it true that the millage could go up to 10 mils for a mosquito control district? Is that within their purview to tax?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe that it technically is. I think that it would be a decision that they would have to vote on at the local level to allow that to happen, and I don't know of any circumstance in which that has occurred. But I think technically they could go above, yes.
Thank you.
Representative, you're recognized for follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So there's a mosquito control district in my district, and they are looking to make a major expansion. They're looking to spend $37 million, and that doesn't include the land. Do you have any thoughts on that? Is that, do you see something typical, or maybe within the buildings that some of these other mosquito control districts have, does that kind of make sense? Or $37 million is a lot of money. Must be a really nice building or something.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that question. And certainly facility expansions and improvements are something that we saw throughout the course of our review. It varies across districts. There are some districts where there's simply such need for additional services because of the development and growth in those districts where they need expanded facilities to be able to house their staff, to house their laboratory operations, their research operations, et cetera. We're not saying whether or not those facility improvements are good or bad, and certainly that is a high dollar amount, but it would be a matter of whether or not that was something that they had funding for. We have seen across our reviews that districts do manage their funds carefully and try to minimize their expenditures on things if they do have to plan for facility improvements such as that. Without more specific information, I'm not sure I could comment in much
more detail. I understand. Thank you.
I did want to share with the members that on the APAGA website, in addition to each performance review for each district, there's also a chart that reviews all the profile data for each district. And for example, Representative Holcomb, one of the columns is the millage rate. So you can look at and compare the current millage rate for each of the districts as well as taxable value, et cetera. So it's small print. You're going to have to spend some time making it bigger, but I appreciated that information. Representative Tuck, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have a couple of questions on a couple different topics, so I'll go through you and you just stop me if you want to give anybody else chances.
You. You're good.
Thank you. So with regard to the performance metrics, I was reading over the slide and it says most districts measure their performance. Is there anything statutory that says what their performance metrics need to be or should be, or do they kind of does each district have their own performance metrics?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that question. That's a great question. There is no statutory specific requirement for what type of measures they have to have. That's, I think, part of the reason why we're recommending that an entity like the Florida Coordinating Council on Mosquito Control could help develop such model goals and objectives and performance measures and standards for the districts, because right now they are determining that on an individual district-by-district basis. But there certainly is a lot of information out there from research and best practices and districts that have been doing this for a long time that could help them develop a more consistent set of measures across all districts.
Representative Tuck, you're recognized.
So on that same line, one of the recommendations was to have certain performance standards. Do you have recommendations on what those standards look like? Because to me, with my knowledge of mosquito control, it's if I'm seeing mosquitoes, it's not a great performance. If I'm not seeing mosquitoes, it is. And that is not quantifiable whatsoever. So what were the recommendations in terms of what the performance metrics look like?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that question. And we did not, in our reports, we did not specify what specific performance metrics should be developed across all districts. One of the reasons that we recommend the Florida Coordinating Council on Mosquito Control convene a group, a subcommittee of mosquito control researchers, professionals across the state, is that these type of metrics they do get very complex. As you said, it's really not that black and white to just say, there's a lot of mosquitoes here, is that good? Does that mean it's good or bad? There are a lot of different complexities that have to do with ecological circumstances, with weather patterns, rainfall, and the timing of the chemical applications depends on all of those factors. So long answer is that we don't have specific metrics we're recommending. We did identify in some of the reports districts that have some measures beyond just service calls and arbovirus counts. Those are important measures. We believe those are good measures to keep. But there are some districts that are reporting some things above and beyond. I think the Keys is a good example where they have some additional measures. So there's just so many things that it wasn't possible for us to narrow down to say these are the three or the five measures that you need. We believe that it is an effort that needs to be a process through which professionals and researchers with this experience could develop that set of model goals.
Representative Tuck, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Moving on to the Glades County recommendation, because that is my area, and the recommendation was to remove the 1 mil cap based on the expenditures. I wanted to know if your data drilled down on what those expenditures look like, if there were any redundancies. I only ask because I'm not sure that this would be popular in my area, if that's the only recommendation. So if there were other recommendations, if your data looked at what that looked like, and if it didn't, that's totally fine as well, but just wanted for the information.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yes, that, I believe that it's such a small district, right? The mosquito control district is very, very small. And that one mil cap, while it's higher than other districts, it is not allowing them, and again, this relates to the funding, the potential funding to acquire some properties so that they could own the canals in the district or have more ownership of the canals in their district. One of the reasons that they have such challenging mosquito control management that's not common in other districts is because of those canals. The aquatic vegetation that builds up is really challenging. It's constant to maintain that, and that creates great habitat for mosquito larvae. So that is costly, and that's why we recommended that. So it's not that their revenues or expenditures are out of balance or that they're expending money on things that they shouldn't be. It's that they just simply need more funds that would help them manage that kind of continual issue of aquatic vegetation in the canals.
Representative Tuck, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. This is my last question, I promise.
Good.
So when it comes to the Collier County Mosquito Control District and their potential expansion, I noticed the recommendation was about the environmentally sensitive areas and working with the environmental groups. I was curious to know, because the Southwest Florida region in general, Glades County, Lee, is so diverse anyways, and it seems like there are some environmentally sensitive areas already covered. So what's the difference in the Collier expansion versus any of the existing mosquito control districts and what they cover?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that question. And it's an interesting question. It's a very good question, and something that it doesn't necessarily mean that Collier has areas that are unique that other districts don't have if they have proximity to natural areas, because those environmentally sensitive lands could be present in other districts like Lee County, like Fort Myers Beach, like Amelia Island. It is simply that the expansion, I think, is broadening those areas to a point where it's also including areas under multiple different types of ownership. You have, I think, a unique kind of expansive list of diverse stakeholders and interests involved in the Collier County situation that might not be exactly the same in other locations. But I don't think that it's a way of saying that those lands are more delicate than other environmentally sensitive areas. It's that it's a unique situation, and it is an expansion into areas that have not had that mosquito control applied to them in the past. So I think that there just is some very strong concern out there that is thought through carefully, and Collier County, or Collier MCD rather, has been working with those groups. So we simply recommend that they continue that outreach so that communication is maintained.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much for your patience. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Members, do we have any additional questions for Dr. Rachevskis, or do you have any comments that you would like to share with the committee? Representative Holcomb, you're recognized.
Going back to one of your earlier slides again, you said most of the MCDs have three members. Would you have any thoughts on recommendations, since they do have the ability to tax, if that should be a higher number based on their ability to have, in this case, two people decide what the tax rate should be for the entire county or the district?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that question. And that's not a recommendation that we made, and that's not we didn't do an analysis that would have looked at like the impact of the number of commissioners on the decisions to levy taxes or to change the millage rate. We do know that the districts generally take those decisions very carefully to when they increase the millage rate, or in some cases decrease it, as they need to manage their resources. And the fact that what we saw was a pretty even balance between revenues and expenditures generally across districts, that they are managing their funds pretty well, which would indicate to us that those millage rates are set at a relatively reasonable rate. Your point is well taken, though, that is not a very large number of commissioners to be making those decisions in districts that perhaps could be fairly extensive in geographic size. But that would be, I think, up to the local population, to the local voters. They can expand the number of commissioners if they wish. So the statute does allow them to have more. So a district with three could increase to have five members if it so chose.
Representative, you're recognized.
So would that be a statute that the Mosquito Control District Board would have to be willing to change, or would that come from state?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe that it's already established in statute that the size of the board is flexible, but I believe it has, and I don't want to misspeak, so I'd be happy to look at that and get back to the committee with the detailed requirements, but I believe it is allowable to increase the size, but there are certain criteria that would have to be met to make that happen.
Thank you, and Representative, we were trying to find the statute real fast, and Florida Statute 388.101. provides a process for expanding the number of members on the board. Members, any additional questions or comments? Well, Dr. Rachevskis, thank you for joining us. I know it was a tall task to do performance reviews on so many districts, and I commend you for your work, and thank you for that and bringing this presentation before us. So thank you for being here.
Thank you very much for having
us. Members, I will wrap up with just a few comments on these special districts. Now, for 2 weeks, we've heard an overview of certain performance reviews, and these performance reviews are very helpful and help lay the basis or groundwork on which to have additional conversations and look at policies and looking at how these districts operate. But nothing can replace your own experience, observation, and communication with folks in your backyard for these districts that are in your area. So I encourage all of you all to stay in communication and understand how these special districts work in your area. For example, I am very familiar with the Fort Myers Beach Mosquito Control District, and while it was small and while the whole island was obliterated by a hurricane, I commend them greatly for getting back to work so fast and providing the historical services that they do for that island. And the town of Fort Myers Beach has spoken out against a consolidation of the mosquito control districts. Many from the public have reached out to my office against such a consolidation. They like the services that are provided. They like the concierge service, the small district. They have half the millage as the county. But that's just some of the feedback that while these performance reviews are so important, they're not an ongoing performance review. It's a static document that looked at a period of time and with the information that was available to them. And that information is constantly changing. So I encourage you all to continue to be in communications with your district, and I thank you all for your good work. We'll see no further business before this committee today. Representative Woodson moves that we rise, and without objection, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.